Hi, and welcome to the Oil and Gas Accounting Podcast. I'm your co-host, Tom Weyerman, Executive Director of COPAS, the Council of Petroleum Accountant Societies. I'm here with my co-host, Phil Sherwood, owner and founder of Sherware, that provides software for oil and gas operators and accountants. If you're a CPA, an accountant, a bookkeeper, an office manager, or if you're an oil and gas operator doing your own accounting, this podcast is for you.
We're here talking with the experts in their respective accounting areas to keep you up to speed on the latest accounting news, rules, and data. There is so much happening in the world today, especially in oil and gas, that affects the accounting function of a business. Our job on this podcast is to keep you up to date and help you see more, know more, and do more as an accounting professional in our field. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back from the holiday break.
Hey, Tom, it's good to be back with the podcast, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It seems like it's been a little while since we've done an episode, but I'm excited. We're going to welcome back today Brent Watson, who was a guest in our first season, on episode number 4. So he was really one of our very first guests. And I'm excited that he's back today because he has some updates for us about how paying close attention to sales and use tax can really save you some money and improve your profitability. Phil, would you take a minute just to reintroduce our listeners to Brent's background?
Yeah. Brent is the principal at Salta LLC, which he founded in 2017 after leaving Grant Thornton. He's got 33 years of practice in sales tax, property tax, and tax incentive programs. And he specialized in working with clients to improve compliance through educating personnel and establishing or improving sales tax processes. Brent's also established rapport with taxing authorities to effectively resolve tax issues on behalf of clients, especially in Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. And Brent's also a frequent speaker, and he's the author of several articles for various publications. Welcome back, Brent.
Glad to be with you.
We're glad to have you back as well. I know there's lots to cover today.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot has changed since the last time you were on here. So let's start with the obvious question. Why should oil and gas operators care about sales and use tax?
Well, success of oil and gas operations really hinges on controlling costs in many cases. And this is one of those costs that's somewhat controllable and can be significant, especially when you realize that sales tax rates between 6 and 9% can apply to many goods that are incorporated into oil and gas wells and operations, as well as some services. That not only just applies to wells, but it also applies to gas plants and other facilities. So those are a controllable cost to a certain extent, and knowing what to do and how to control those costs can make the difference a lot of times between a good profitable operation or maybe not so profitable. And when those rates are combined with some factors that lead to these overpayments of tax, you can see how those opportunities for savings can happen. There's really three factors that I'd like to point out that create these overpayments and the opportunity conversely to save tax. One of those is that vendors will charge tax by default in order to avoid audit assessments. If you're a vendor, you have to really be on the defense in the sales tax world. So if there's any possibility something could be taxable, a vendor will charge tax if they're smart. examples of where that can affect you are sales of separators. Texas, for example, exempts separators, and some other states do as well, as manufacturing equipment. But if the customer, if the operator doesn't claim the exemption, the vendor will often charge tax on that. The same thing is true on things like wireline services. Sometimes wireline services are taxable and sometimes they're not. It depends on what type of project those wireline services are part of. And so the vendor, not knowing necessarily what that project is, they're sending a truck out to do the service, they will just charge tax. And additionally, a lot of the smaller well service companies really just are very unsophisticated when it comes to sales tax, and they make lots of errors. Then another factor that figures into this is that states will, some states will tax services, but not all services. For example, Texas has a list of 17 services that they call enumerated services. And those include, we'll talk about this in a minute, but repair of real property and repair of personal property. But other services are not taxable. For example, plugging and abandoning a well, or just cutting brush, things like that. So it can get complicated when you have some services taxed and not others. And then finally, many of these states that we'll talk about have exemptions that apply to some of the equipment, as well as some services and consumables. For example, if you're building or improving a gas or oil well in Texas or a plant, that would be exempt. Separators, dehydrators, and things of that nature are exempt in some states, but not others. And then there are some, to a lesser extent, there are exemptions that apply to operation of wells and gas plants, things like utilities and chemicals. One case study that I'll point out, a project I did for a smaller oil and gas operator that only operated in Texas and only operated for a few years, they developed three deep horizontal wells, which then they turned around and sold with their acreage. And on those three deep horizontal wells, we got them a direct pay permit, and we closely monitored the sales tax and took advantage of all the exemptions from the beginning, and they saved about $100,000 per well. So this is something you can proactively manage if you get involved from the beginning on those type of projects.
That's a lot of savings. You had mentioned that an operator giving a vendor an exempt certificate. Just want to dig into that a little bit further, because sometimes I've seen companies give exemption certificates when I didn't think it was really exempt. How do you handle that if, you know, as a vendor, if you get an exemption certificate from an operator and you think it should really be charged?
Well, there's a couple aspects to that, two sides of that coin. First of all, I have seen some operators, and one in particular comes to mind, that was sort of like a politician at a parade throwing candy out to the kids. He was giving exemption certificates to all kinds of vendors for things like supply, pipe supply, and different types of supplies that went out to the lease sites, which were obviously taxable. Well, then what happened was that vendor got audited by the state and assessed a ton of money. And then the supply company went back to the operator, and it was several hundred thousand dollars. And that's just not a good thing, because you have to jib out those costs. And a lot of times the well might've been sold, or maybe it's been plugged and abandoned. It's just inactive. So it's really harmful to everyone. And if you're a vendor, vendors are allowed to accept in good faith an exemption certificate. But if they highly suspect, or if it seems pretty obvious that someone is issuing those fraudulently, they should question those so they don't get hung with that later in an audit.
Yeah.
Because it could add up to a lot of money, as you've indicated. I mean, it could be pretty significant. Well, you know, I think you have about 10 states you want to cover with us today. But let's take your Texas example first. What are some major tax issues facing Texas operators today?
Yeah, and Texas by far and away is the largest state as far as production. I think the last I saw, Texas was producing about 49% of the oil in the U.S. It's just amazing. And then gas was in the 20-something percent. So a lot of folks are justly, you know, concerned about Texas because of their large operations there. And Texas is especially a more complicated state because they tax services, including repair of real property and including repairs of personal property. And there are a number of other services that are of lesser importance that are taxed as well, but we don't have time to cover those in this discussion. And on the flip side of that, Texas provides quite a few exemptions. New construction is exempt as opposed to what they call remodeling. So if a well is being developed and there's a pad site being put in, that's exempt. Whereas, or if you're putting in a new road, that's exempt. But if somebody's going out and replacing culverts or repairing a road, that's taxable. So you can see there's the exemption for new construction. Manufacturing exemption applies to gas plants and as well as a lot of equipment in the field, but not all equipment. Utilities to produce oil and gas are exempt, and to transport oil and gas as well. Drilling, completion, recompletion of stimulating wells, including things like plugging back, changing zones, reacidizing, things of that nature are exempt as opposed to just a workover. Unprocessed water and earth substances, including frac sand. This is a big deal, by the way, because the state has been really contesting the frac sand exemption lately. But those are exempt, as well as the dyed diesel that's used to operate the rigs. So there are many opportunities to avoid paying tax on using these exemptions. And there also is a challenge on whether or not those services are taxable. And how I will point operator, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Let me just jump in. How is an operator, how would you keep track of all this?
Well, this is it is complicated, and the old 80-20 rule maybe apply here. It's really difficult to get into the weeds and know all the details of all those small exemptions. But for example, if you know that new construction is exempt, you know, you can watch out for things like having a utility company run a line out to a well. As they say, a new hole in a new pole, or a new pole in a new hole. If you run an electric line out to a well, that's exempt. But if you have the electric company strings a new line out and there's already poles there, just knowing that new construction is exempt is important. Knowing that things like separators and dehydrators are considered manufacturing equipment, those are large ticket items. And knowing that the utilities, propane or electric, to operate wells are exempt, or to operate also things like compression stations, things of that nature. Just knowing those few exemptions can produce a really significant tax savings.
Yeah, so that's Texas. What's another state that has tax issues facing operators?
Another state we might want to talk about is New Mexico. New Mexico is sort of the flip side of Texas. It doesn't provide a lot of exemptions. And New Mexico, unlike most other states, taxes basically all services. So it's kind of like something Ronald Reagan said one time: if it moves, it gets taxed, and if it doesn't move, it gets taxed twice. So
I yes. love that line.
And New Mexico loves to apply their gross receipts tax to just about everything. Now, folks that are operating gas plants can take advantage of the manufacturing exemption that New Mexico implemented a few years ago. But in order to do that, the operator has to have a New Mexico sales tax account, which they call gross receipts tax, or GRT. Then that buyer, the operator of that plant, can download the NTTC, or non-taxable transaction certificate, from the New Mexico taxation portal and issue that to their vendors. One other thing I'll point out is if you're doing business in West Texas over in the Permian area, and you have vendors from New Mexico, New Mexico vendors are so bent on charging tax on everything, they don't understand when you go across the state line, New Mexico doesn't tax. New Mexico tax doesn't apply to Texas wells. So you might, some of your operators might want to keep that in mind. I've seen New Mexico tax charged on many transactions to wells in Texas.
You've just got to pay attention is what you're saying. You got to really be on top of your game on that situation so that you don't have that occur.
Okay. So what about states in the eastern U.S.? What are you finding there?
Well, there are three states that we'll talk about during our podcast today in the eastern U.S. that all on the surface look somewhat similar as far as their exemptions, but in actuality, the first one we'll talk about, Pennsylvania, is a little bit different. Pennsylvania, like Ohio and West Virginia, all have what look like generous exemptions. Pennsylvania's exemption is really broad. It applies to equipment and other property used in the production of oil and gas and other mining activities. So Pennsylvania treats oil and gas production as mining. And of course, there's lots of coal production there. And so that exemption has been in place for a long time. And it covers things like drilling, completion, operation of wells, as well as pollution control activities for those wells. But the flying ointment is that the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue has been very aggressive in denying those exemptions. And they've kind of garnered a reputation for being pretty unreasonable. They're not real friendly to the oil and gas industry in general.
So what do you do in a situation like that? Do you just appeal it and wait for the process to flow through, or how is that dealt with? Or you just accept that that's going to be the way it is?
I've talked to some folks that have dealt with that, and they've contested things, and eventually sometimes they were successful and sometimes they weren't. Fortunately, most states are not that difficult to deal with, but apparently Pennsylvania has been.
Okay. What about North Dakota? What are you seeing there?
Well, North Dakota, like many of the states we're going to talk about today, does not, you know, in contrast to Pennsylvania, North Dakota doesn't really have a general exemption that applies to oil and gas, but there are some specific exemptions, namely for construction or expansion of gas of carbon dioxide usage or systems to collect carbon dioxide for usage in tertiary recoveries operations. So, and then the second exemption that North Dakota provides is for the expansion or new construction of systems to collect, compress, or treat natural gas. And I think that that latter exemption was put in place years ago because when the Bakken was really going hot, and it's still going pretty hot, but when it was really going hot and when it was first being developed, there weren't enough gas lines to transport the gas. So a lot of that gas was just being flared off. It was just a tremendous waste and an environmental an area where environmentalists, of course, would have been unhappy. So North Dakota wanted to provide an incentive for folks to expand those pipelines, those gathering systems to collect that gas. And so they've enacted that exemption. One other opportunity in North Dakota is their rebate on local taxes. So in general, if you ship into a city like Williston, there's a cap on the local tax per invoice, and those caps are between $2,500, $25 and $100, depending on the city and some counties. Just to give you an example, if you shipped $1 million worth of pipe into Williston, which, by the way, you'd be better off shipping it outside the city limits and you'd avoid the local tax altogether. But if you shipped $1 million of pipe into Williston, at 2%, that's $20,000 in tax. Williston's cap is $50. So you can file a refund claim for $19,950 with the North Dakota Tax Commission. Williams County, on the other hand, which where Williston is located, doesn't provide a rebate. So only certain counties and cities provide those rebates.
Well, let's talk about Oklahoma. What major tax issues face Oklahoma operators?
Oklahoma, again, like North Dakota, doesn't have a general exemption for oil and gas operations. And the main thing, there's two really main things that we'll talk about in Oklahoma. One of them is for people that operate gas plants. Those are considered manufacturing operations, but in order to claim that exemption, the operator has to apply for and be approved by the Oklahoma Tax Commission for an MSEP or a manufacturer's sales tax exemption permit. And until that permit is claimed, the exemption can't be claimed on purchases. So this could be a significant savings in gas to operate, electric to operate those plants, as well as all the equipment, amine units, compression units, all the fractionating equipment. The tax on that could really add up. So it's really important when someone's building a gas plant to apply for one of those MSEPs. The second point I'd like to discuss in Oklahoma is not a positive, but a negative, and that's a negative you want to avoid. Oklahoma, unlike most states, and by the way, this also applies to Colorado and Wyoming, they are three of the four states that do not have a general exemption for isolated sales. So what that means is if you're selling a business in Oklahoma, Oklahoma tax applies to the tangible personal property, basically the machinery, equipment, furniture, and fixtures, and other fixed assets like that that are included in the sale. And when interest in oil and gas well is sold in Oklahoma, it's not treated as an intangible. That is actually treated as a proportional sale, a sale of a proportional part of the interest in that well. So whatever part of that value of that well that's attributable to tangible personal property, that portion is subject to Oklahoma sales tax. This becomes a big surprise to a lot of folks. And when they get a notice down the road from the Oklahoma Tax Commission wanting to know why they didn't apply, tax wasn't reported on the purchase or sale of interest in oil and gas wells or pipelines. Additionally, an important aspect of that is allocating the value of those properties. As you know, the majority of the value in a lease is the mineral interest, but the tax commission will take an aggressive stance on that. And in the past, they insisted on 21% at times, which is a ridiculous allocation. But I recommend that folks buying or selling interest in property in leases in Oklahoma include in the PSA an allocation of that value so that doesn't become an argument with the tax commission down the road.
What's the turnaround on these states reviewing their sales tax issues? I mean, are they fairly current, or are they going, you know, 2 or 3 years in arrears? Maybe you can comment on that.
Well, Oklahoma, specifically, I'll mention this on Oklahoma. What happens a lot of times in Oklahoma is, well, two things can trigger a review by the tax commission on these occasional sales. One of them is when there's a change of operator, and the operator, that form is filed with the Oklahoma Corporation Commission. They will send that information over to the tax commission, and the next thing you know, a year or two later, you get this love letter from the tax commission.
You've been flagged for review.
Yeah. And the other thing that triggers these is when the corporate tax return is filed, and there's a Form 4797 for gain or loss on the disposition of assets. The Oklahoma Tax Commission gets that, and the next thing you know, they're sending the same kind of letter. So there's two ways that can happen, and sometimes that's 2 or even 3 years after the sale, after everybody else has sort of forgotten about it, and all of a sudden here's this big headache coming your way.
How can you catch these things ahead of time?
Well, as far as Oklahoma goes, if there's ever a sale of interest in leases or a pipeline, you know, it's really important to be proactive on that and get that handled in the PSA. The seller should insist on a provision that they'll report the taxes and the buyer will reimburse them. And it's important for the buyer also to have an allocation so that they're protected as far as not getting this huge unrealistic cost of tax. And I would recommend if it's a large sale of property, it may pay to spend some money and get an appraisal by a reputable appraisal firm. The tax commission in the past has insisted at times on this 21% allocation. And I've seen appraisals done where it was between 10 and 14% or even less. So that may be really important on the sale of large blocks of wells.
What about Louisiana? That's an active oil and gas state. What are you seeing there that you might want to comment on?
Well, Louisiana, like many of the other states, doesn't have a general exemption. But one of the things I've seen that becomes an issue at times is that Louisiana taxes work on tangible personal property, which, as you know, they're based on French law and not English law.
Right.
So they don't call it tangible personal property. They call it movable property, but it's the same thing. But there is no tax on services to real property, which they call immovable property. So if you have, for example, a wireline operator going out to a well, and they're, you know, maybe they're clean baling sand, or I don't know what they're doing in the well. The well is considered to be immovable property. So that service in Louisiana would not generally be taxable. On the other hand, if someone were pulling like a downhole pump, an ESP out and repairing that, or repairing the tubing, I think that's going to be considered movable property and that would be taxable. So I've seen tax charged on a lot of that wireline type service that shouldn't have been taxed. And we've actually seen that tax get refunded by the state on when it's claimed in a refund. Another issue that I've seen from time to time that can be substantial is for dyed diesel. The state tax applies, but parish tax does not. And I've seen vendors charge both the state and parish taxes. And if you don't mind, Phil, what I'd like to do at this point is I just thought of something I'd like to go back and mention on Texas in regard to the dyed diesel. If an operator is buying dyed diesel that's used in drilling rigs, it's really important that that operator know that they can get registered for what's called a bonded dyed diesel permit. I'm not sure of the exact terms, but you get a fuel tax license basically that requires you to file a return once a year, and there's not going to be any tax due. But that permit allows that operator to buy, you know, thousands and thousands of gallons of dyed diesel that are used in drilling wells without paying the tax. I had a client that didn't get one of those ahead of time. And when we realized what was going on, there was over $200,000 of fuel tax that they had paid. Fortunately, in this case, we were able to go back and get the permit, and we actually filed a refund claim, which we were told wouldn't be paid, but it did get paid. So they were able to recover that money, but it was a substantial amount of money. So it's definitely something you want to pay attention to if you're drilling wells in Texas. And if the operator is paying for that dyed diesel, you want to get that permit before you start drilling.
Certainly worth your time to review that and get that in advance. So,
yeah, there's a lot of money at stake here, it sounds like. Let's go back to that Louisiana, you know, French or English, movable property, immovable property. Doesn't that describe tangible so much better?
It actually makes sense to me.
Yeah, it actually makes sense. I like that. So you had briefly mentioned Colorado. Tell us, you know, with the active oil and gas industry there, what do they need to be aware of?
Well, Colorado has an exemption that applies, but it only applies in enterprise zones. Fortunately, those enterprise zones cover most of the state. So if someone's operating leases in those enterprise zones, there's an exemption that applies to downhole pumps and wellhead equipment. So unlike a lot of the other states that exempt some of the surface equipment, like separators and dehydrators, Colorado's exemption more or less applies to the well itself, kind of the converse of Texas, but all that surface equipment, including things that would be exempt in Texas, are taxed. So it's kind of like the negative image of Texas. Also, I will point out, as I said earlier, just a reminder that if you're buying or selling leases in Colorado, they don't have an occasional sale exemption either, generally. So that's something that needs to be taken into account.
What about the shale operations in Appalachia? What are you seeing there, maybe in West Virginia, Ohio, or any of those states?
Well, back when we first started talking about Pennsylvania, I mentioned that Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio are somewhat similar in their exemptions, and that is true. All three of those states have a really broad exemption that applies to consumables, services, and equipment used in West Virginia, says used directly in the production of oil and gas as a mining operation. Of course, all three of those states had a lot of coal mining, and the coal mining industry got these exemptions years ago, and the oil and gas industry has kind of fallen in on that exemption. So that West Virginia exemption sounds great, and it is great. It applies to not just the leases, but it applies to the gas treatment facilities. But the interesting thing about West Virginia is, unless the operator obtains what's called a direct pay permit, when they start those operations, they have to pay the sales tax to the vendors. I'll pause just a minute and explain that what a direct pay permit is it's a special type of sales tax permit that'll basically cuts the middleman out. So typically a sales tax transaction is like a triangle. The customer pays tax to the vendor, and then the vendor remits that tax to the state. But with a direct pay permit, the vendor is cut out of that triangle, and the buyer, the purchaser, pays tax directly to the state, hence the term direct pay permit. So when an operator gets one of those direct pay permits, they're allowed to not accrue and report tax on those purchases to the state, which is a lot better than paying the tax to the vendor and then then later being forced to go back and apply for a refund of those taxes. And then to move on to that other, the third of those three Appalachian type states is Ohio. As I said, just like Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio has a very broad exemption that applies to, as Ohio says, equipment, consumables, and services used directly in the production of oil and gas as a mining operation. Now, the one thing about Ohio that really needs to be paid attention to is that the exemption doesn't apply to pre-production or post-production operations. So things like mixing frac fluids are considered to be pre-production, and that would be taxable in Ohio, as well as removable waste materials after the well's drilled, because that's considered to be post-production.
That should bring us to the 10th state on your list. Which state is that?
That is correct, and that state would be Wyoming. Wyoming used to be famous in the oil and gas industry as far as sales tax goes, because they have what they call the Special K exemption, which referred to their statute. And in the past, Wyoming only exempted things that were within, I think it was 500 foot or 250 foot of the wellhead. And it was quite a confusing mess. So Wyoming changed that law a few years ago, and they don't really provide a general exemption of oil and gas that applies to oil and gas operations, but and Wyoming does tax services associated with the development operation of wells, but there is an exemption that applies to services that occur during the setting up to the setting of production casing during the production of a well. So things like seismic studies, actually drilling the well, things like that, those are exempt. But once the casing is being set in a well, that's when tax applies to all of those services from then, from that point forward in the well, in the life of the well. And Wyoming does not exempt equipment at the well site. So it's generally speaking, the only exemption in Wyoming that applies is that non-taxability of services up to the point that the casing is set. Wyoming does provide an exemption for utilities used in gas plants, because those are considered to be used in processing.
Okay. Well, we've been talking about sales taxes a lot. You had also mentioned use taxes. Can we talk about use taxes and how they differ from sales taxes? And is there anything special about those that people need to be aware of?
Well, sales and use tax are the flip side of a coin, and most people don't even know what use tax is. But use tax is the tax that's paid when sales tax would not have normally been paid. So, for example, if I have somebody in Wichita ship me some furniture down here to Oklahoma where I live, they may not charge me Oklahoma tax, but Oklahoma doesn't like the fact that I'm going to get away with not paying tax on that. So I would owe consumer use tax. This is what happens in Texas, for example, or West Virginia. If the operator were to get a direct pay permit, the vendor would not charge them sales tax, but the operator is liable to accrue and pay consumer use tax unless an exemption applies to that purchase.
What's a good takeaway for our listeners from the discussion we've had today? What would you like to leave with them?
I think the 80-20 rule sort of applies in this case. Unless someone wants to be a sales tax specialist, they're not going to know all these rules. And honestly, I can't keep up with all the changes in these rules myself. It's just, it's a never-ending change. And states keep changing the way they apply their laws. For example, in Texas, Comptroller's been very aggressive lately in denying the exemption of frac sand, unless you can prove it's unprocessed. They were denying the exemption on oil-soluble chemicals, and now they're sort of backing off on that and gas treatment chemicals, which I think they've totally backed off now and are allowing the exemption. But having said that, there's just a lot of ground to cover. But you can focus on the big ticket items. If you focus on, as I pointed out in Texas, the utilities to operate a well, the manufacturing type equipment, separators and dehydrators that process the gas, those are all big ticket items, as well as new construction. So if you focus on those, operators focus on those and make sure they get those exemptions, they can probably accomplish well north of half of the savings, and maybe 75% or more. But you're never going to be able to get all of that unless you have someone on board that's a specialist in sales tax. And that's why a lot of times operators end up hiring somebody to come in and review their purchases after the fact.
But it sounds like, though, you still have an opportunity to get the low-hanging fruit, maybe the bigger portion of it, just knowing some key things to be watching for. And I think that's what you've pointed out today to our listeners, so they have an opportunity. And of course, then if they have deeper questions, then they consult people like you and your staff to help them out. So
that's true. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to share with your audience today. I trust this will be beneficial to some of your members. If any of them have any questions after they hear this presentation, I'll be glad to try to help them out with their question.
That sounds good. And we do thank you, Brent, for coming on today. Certainly, I think we learned a lot about things to be aware of. And again, as you mentioned, you're going to be available. Phil, can we put his contact information in the show notes?
Yes, we sure will. We'll include your contact info in the show notes and a little bit about your company. I really enjoyed this conversation because it sounds like with some knowledge and little effort, companies can expect, to save a lot as they complete and operate their wells if they're just aware of, these little gotchas with sales and use tax.
I think that wraps up our episode of the Oil and Gas Accounting Podcast today. And I'm going to ask you, Phil, to remind our listeners where they can find these episodes.
Yeah, you can find us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google. And we'd love to hear from you. So be sure to leave a review, be sure to download episodes, and be sure to share the podcast with folks in your office or folks you know in the industry.
We Brent, really thanks again. It. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks, Brent.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Oil and Gas Accounting Podcast. We are really grateful for everyone who takes the time to listen. Could we ask you a favor? Would you head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating or review? Believe it or not, it really does help us to get the word out about the podcast, and we'd love to hear from you. Another way you could help us out is by sharing this episode across your social media channels. You folks who listen can help us get the word out about our little podcast. And again, we would really appreciate it. If you want to be notified when a new episode releases, head over to our website, oilandgasaccountingpodcast.com, and sign up to our list. We only send emails when a podcast episode releases, so you won't have to worry about getting a lot of emails. Thank you again so much.